we look at AI and we think, okay, well, the thing is, I need to go do X, Y, Z. I need to integrate AI into my website, or I need to integrate AI into my customer service. Sure, that's part of it. But if you are really going to reinvent yourself, it will require that you also do some inner work, because you need to reinvent how you show up in the world, how you think about these things, and how you bring people along if you're a leader.
I've tackled so many different topics over the 240 plus episodes that you've done. How did you choose like the theme of the book and what you put in and what you put out?
The aim of the book is exactly the same as the aim of the podcast, which is that we want people to live a more expansive life and not be constrained by what society has told them is achievable, or what they've come to believe over the course of their own lives and the sort of own limits they've imposed on themselves is what's achievable.
Before we start this podcast, will you please like, follow, and subscribe to the Right Place podcast right here on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Rudolf and I would also love to connect with you on LinkedIn, so look us up there too. Thank you. Cheers. Welcome to the Right Place podcast. My name is John, and today my guest is Eric Kruger. He's a global keynote speaker, author, leadership specialist, helping leaders to adapt faster and lead smarter. He challenges leaders to rethink how they show up, recalibrate for an era of rapid change, and turn personal transformation into a competitive advantage. You may know him as one of the speakers on the Expansive podcast, along with the other John, Mr. John Sarnay. It's one of my favorite podcasts, and I try and catch it every week. Eric, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for listening to the pod. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Eric. Eric, we're going to talk about your work in the leadership space very soon, but it's quite an exciting time for the Expansive podcast. The Expansive book is coming out in a few days' time. What is your and John's aim with this book?
The book just arrived at John's offices today. So I'm waiting for a video of the book being opened, and hopefully I'll get my author copies tomorrow as well. We are pumped to be bringing the book out. I think the aim of the book is exactly the same as the aim of the podcast, which is that we want people to live a more expansive life and not be constrained by what society has told them is achievable, or what they've come to believe over the course of their own lives and the sort of own limits they've imposed on themselves is what's achievable. And so the expansive has always been, let's think bigger, let's be bolder, let's cross boundaries and borders. And I think the book is the distillation, ultimately, of 9,500 minutes of exploring that as a topic and trying to figure out what that looks like, because we don't think that we have it all figured out. We are on this mission and this journey as much as everyone else. And the podcast really has been us just documenting that journey. And so it's kind of great to get to a place where now it's been packaged in a very concise manner, easy to digest, and people can dive in without having to go and listen to 9,500 minutes of audio.
That's excellent, Eric. And I think it's amazing that you can take so much content and distill it down into a book. I mean, The Expansive has tackled so many different topics over the 240 plus episodes that you've done. How did you choose like the theme of the book and what you put in and what you put out? And then also maybe give us a bit of a background on the process you went into distilling down into the book form.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what a great time to be alive with AI that can process vast amounts of data to help with this kind of thing. It came at the right time for us. But it really is a very modern book in the way that we approached it. So the first part of it is generate 9,500 minutes of audio. And then the second part to that was that we sat down and looked at some of our favorite episodes. So we just dove into the analytics in the back end that we have. What were the most listened to episodes? What were typical themes that came out of that? Then we used AI to scrape all of the data from iTunes and Spotify. We identified the most important episodes, which at the end of the day, we still tried to get to most of them. Like we wanted to cover as many of the episodes as possible. But we did want to prioritize what resonated most for people. Then we had a ghostwriter help us take all the transcripts and turn it into what sounds like The Expansive. And then we'd use artificial intelligence being trained on all of those transcripts to infuse some voice back into it. And then we ultimately edited it down for precision, for to make sure it sounds like us and that it's conveying the message that we wanted to convey. And that editing process was quite a bit of back and forth. And that's the book. That was the process. It was a huge undertaking, even though we didn't have to write from scratch, even though we had all the raw material. It was still just a massive process of having to curate, you know, what's going to impact people the most, because we only had to choose 52 nuggets from everything that we've covered.
And in choosing those 52 nuggets, I mean, it sounds like this is not a book that you're going to read once and put it on your bookshelf and forget about it. This is almost like a constant companion or a guy that you can reflect on a weekly basis by yourself or either with your team. Was that also the intention?
Definitely, yeah. We wanted to. So the first book that I wrote was called Acta Non Verba, which came from a newsletter that I was writing. And the idea with Acta Non Verba was actions, not words. So take these 180 reflections, read one a day, and then go and do something with it. And so very much inspired by that idea, The Expansive book is all about one reflection per week, either for yourself or with your team. We really had leaders and organizations in mind as we were discussing and distilling it down. But ultimately, you know, any transformation or reinvention starts with you and then filters through to your teams and to your organization. So it can be used as a solo reflection or with a group of people as well.
Excellent. And this is also like almost a companion to the podcast. Is there some sort of connection? Like if I like chapter number 40 and it's talking about a certain topic, is there maybe a link back to the podcast if I want to go and learn more about what you and John or Eric spoke about on this topic? Is that something maybe that will also be there?
It was something that we wanted to have there. We didn't get around to actually doing it. We wanted to connect each chapter with a specific podcast episode. But because it's like what ended up happening was that each chapter was actually sort of an amalgamation of different episodes. So it wasn't that we took one episode, transcribed it, and turned it into a chapter. That one chapter would be, they spoke about, you know, expansive leadership on these few different podcasts. What were the best insights from those and then kind of brought together? So there wasn't a clear link to one episode. So I thought, okay, let me use AI and we can kind of connect it. And that just didn't work. I tried many, many different times to get AI to help me with that. It didn't work. And we were right up against the publishing schedule. So we were like, cool idea, but we just couldn't make it happen. So we had to let it go. But I do think, you know, what we want to do is kind of revisit some of these chapters as we go along. So we'll be covering them and discussing them on the pod with even more detail. So if you do pick up a copy of the book, I think you'll find some enrichment in the fact that we will go into further detail on the pod now, like in present time. So you don't have to go back and go and look through the archives.
Okay, excellent. That makes a lot of sense. And now, Eric, talking about launches, the book launches in South Africa are taking place at the Tryst in Cape Town and Johannesburg, where Mark Sham hosts his Suits the Sneakers events. Now, you and John Sonne are both ex-speakers at the Suits the Sneakers events. Tell me about your relationship with Mark, how it's grown over the years. It seems to be a wonderful collaboration space for you and John as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I met Mark when I was still running Better Man, and I remember just – it was one of those conversations where a few people told me that you need to meet this guy. And I think it was kind of similar, you know, on his side, people saying like, you need to meet Eric. And we were both in the space of building community. I was building Better Man. He was building Suits and Sneakers. So I think we had a very natural connection point around the need to build community and wanting to make the world a better place in some shape or format. And so we connected. He put me onto the Suits and Sneakers stage probably way before I actually had the right to be on a Suits and Sneakers stage. And I think my talks were well received because he kept inviting me back for more of them. And over time, you know, I mean, if I look back today, I've had an accelerated career in my speaking, like from a speaking point of view, because speaking takes a long time to build credibility and to learn the right skills you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And I've been very fortunate that I've met the right mentors at the right time, the right people who've opened up the right opportunities for me at the right time. And Mark is definitely, he's been the catalyst for that. He's the one who kickstarted my career. There's no doubt. If I think Suits and Sneakers would have, you know, gave me the platform. So the three guys actually is Mark, Richard Mulholland, and John, obviously, John Sarnay. So those three have really, I believe, catapulted my career. But I feel very indebted to Mark for taking a chance on me very early on when I was just getting going.
Now, that's a wonderful story, Eric. And it's maybe also one of the things that, I've picked up from the Expansive podcast is this concept of competition happens at the bottom. Those at the top are collaborating. And it's been wonderful to see your collaboration with Mark, with Suits and Sneakers, John as well. And you mentioned Richard Mulholland, and he was actually you actually MC or co-hosted his book launch recently. And again, I mean, the sneaker space can be quite competitive, can be quite cutthroat. You're almost competing for the same piece of the pie, but you're very supportive of one another. And that really is, I don't know if it's a South African thing. I don't know if it's an international thing as well that you see it. But talk to me a little bit about Richard, about his book, Relentless Relevance. You've done the foreword for that as well. I mean, what a crazy cool character.
Yeah, I love Rich. So I met Rich, I think it was also around the Better Man time. And I was just my brother was working at Microsoft. Well, he still works there, but that was his early days in Microsoft. And they had an event that they were attending, and Rich was the speaker, and he came back and was like, geez, there was a speaker guy who dropped so many F-bombs. And I'm like, at a Microsoft event? And it's like, yeah. I was like, well, I need to look up this dude. And he was like, he dropped a lot of F-bombs, but he's a really great speaker. So found Rich, you know, tattooed, rebel vibes, reached out to him. We had a coffee. And then, you know, Rich is, he's been in the speaking space for so long. So he helped me to really think through how to put together a talk, how to structure a talk. And when I launched Acton & Verba, his company Missing Link actually designed the PowerPoint presentation for me. They did some speaker training for me. I was on stage, like so in four ways. They had this crazy cool office with foofy slides and all kinds of things. And at the top of the on the second floor, they had a little stage. And so I remember delivering a talk there on Acton & Verba. So it was just like they really helped me to polish my skills as a speaker in the very, very early days. And Rich's book, Relentless Relevance, is all about, as you can guess, relevance. And I think Richard has a great way of articulating like where you find yourself in the moment and the next step you need to take in order to dissolve the tension that exists. And definitely one of the biggest tensions we have at the moment is that artificial intelligence has come into the picture. It has created a lot of uncertainty about what is the future going to look like? Where will I fit into that picture? How will I add value to society? And ultimately, you can boil all of that down to this one word, relevance. And I think Richard wrestled with his own relevance in context of the time that he's in his life from a age point of view, from the work that he does. And so I think, you know, he's great at taking like that internal struggle and wrestle and translating that onto the page. And that's what he's done with Relentless Relevance. So there's AI stuff, but there's also just a bunch of great Richard Mulholland ideas you'll find in the book.
No, that's wonderful. It's really so cool to see this collaboration happening in real life and being supportive of one another. And I mean, now coming back, just completing the circle at that book launch for Relentless Relevance with Richard, you were then talking about your own book, Dangerous. And this is the book that got me onto your track, and I connected with you over the book, and it's such a spectacular book. And you said recently on the Expansive podcast, when you were actually talking to Richard, that you thought you were done with Dangerous. And it came out a few years ago. You did quite a few talks on it. You almost wanted to move on. You wanted to explore new ideas. You really get into the AI space, especially with talking to John every week. And now when I heard this, I thought of a musician that they keep creating new music, but but the crowd wants the greatest hits. Do you almost see Dangerous as like one of your greatest hits? And people want to keep hearing more about it because it's so relevant. It's a like a topic that's not going to really go out of fashion because we have to become dangerous.
Dangerous was an interesting book for me because when I wrote Acta Non Verba, I almost dissociate from the book straight away. It was a very weird thing that happened. I went through the process of getting it up and running. We published it. The moment it came out, I like stepped back from it. I think I sold it to my initial sort of email list that I had at the time. And then that was kind of it. I don't know if I was like in a way ashamed of it. Because I felt like I jippoed the process because I didn't write it, sit down and write a book. It was a collection of my emails that I published in that book. I don't know what it was. I need to go deal with that trauma. But when Dangerous came out, it was the complete opposite. You know, I spent a lot of time finessing the idea. When I launched it, I had a big PR push behind it, sold it hard for months, and it went really well to the point that we've entered a second print run. Currently, like you can't, I think it's back in store now, but I've been getting so many emails, people saying like, I can't find it. Yeah, like you're right in that after the initial push and the success that it had, I mean, the book came out in 2022. I thought, okay, like that was, you know, it's run its course. And then this year, because it's still on my website as a talk, I've been getting so many requests for it. And the challenge for it has always been that to talk about being dangerous at an organizational event is tricky, you know, because they're so finicky with their language, which has been a challenge for me. And some organizations are very open to saying, yeah, we need to be more dangerous because they can understand the context of it. Others are like, yeah, like this language is too edgy for us. But yes, it's a greatest hit in that it became a bestseller, but it still became a bestseller in a small pond. And so, you know, there's a guy that I follow who wrote a book probably 10 years ago. And he's still launching that book today because the reality is that even if you've sold millions of copies, 99.9% of people still haven't heard about your book ever. And so I think there's the opportunity, if you have a good idea in a book, to keep relaunching it, you know, to keep finding new audiences for that book. But the trick is, and I guess this is, you know, when you listen to musicians, you think like, geez, they must be so tired of that song. I think that's one of the biggest challenges is that you do get a bit tired of saying the same thing. And if you listen to someone like Joe Dispenza, like I find him fascinating for many reasons. But one is that when he talks about his work, he talks about it in the exact same way every single time. And I don't mean like he uses more or less the same ideas. I mean, he uses the same sentence structures over and over. And I don't mean like a few microscripts here and there. I mean like paragraphs of language that is just exactly the same. And he's been able to just go with that. And I think as a result, because he's willing to relaunch the exact same language and ideas to new audiences over and over and over, he's selling out, you know, events for thousands of tickets. And he's doing that multiple times a year. So yeah, I think the resurgence has been interesting because it's finding a new audience, and it's been doing that organically. So I think I'm going to stick with it for now. I was thinking about launching a new book after Expansive, but I actually think I'm going to stick with it for now and kind of see where it takes me.
No, I think that's a good approach. I mean, especially with the Expansive book coming out, I think there's going to be a new audience as well. It's going to come from that as well. And people are going to be like, okay, we know John's the future guy. Okay. Eric's the dangerous guy, and you kind of got this broad spectrum that you and John both cover. And when you started your podcast a few years ago, AI was on the up, but it wasn't as crazy as it is now. So how have you had to like almost expand your own minds to be able to expand your audience's grasp of the concept of AI? I mean, I think you'll probably say, look, I'm lucky that I talk to Mr. Future himself, John Sarnay, on a pretty much a weekly basis. But you've had to almost run the treadmill with as AI is growing, try and keep up yourself. But I just find that the concept of your podcast so fascinating, because it's like it's a learning podcast. We're learning while you're learning, while you're figuring out. Mm-hmm. I'm also trying to figure it out as well. Tell me a bit about that journey, and especially like the impact of AI on that.
Yeah, I think we both have a big fascination with it and a big interest in AI. So I think at some point we're actually quite weary of not becoming an AI first podcast, because it was almost starting to lean that way. It was the, you know, it's the most talked about topic. Everyone wants to know about it. Everyone wants to understand it better. And of course, it makes sense to stay on top of the trends. Like, that's part of what the Expansive is about. Like, we want to highlight important trends that might be happening in the world, so people are aware of them, but they can also respond to them in a conscious manner. And so, of course, like, we covered AI the moment it started coming out. I've built apps on Replit and on Lovable. I try and immerse myself in it as much as possible. I've recently started using it to see how do I use AI as a tool for self-development, because it's this interesting space we are in where AI is the thing prompting us to reinvent ourselves. And at the same time, it's also the medium that you can use to reinvent yourself. You know, like, the thing that forces you to do the reinvention is the thing that you can use for the reinvention. So I've been exploring that as well. And I think so our fascination in some ways is maybe slightly different, which has always been what's made the pod actually work, is that I think John looks at it from a very high level, like, where is this taking us point of view? And I'm trying to figure out, well, what is the practical application of it in my own life, and how do leaders and teams use it? And initially I was like, well, how do we use it for performance and for team cohesion and collaboration, that kind of thing? And now I'm more like, well, how do we use it to reinvent ourselves? How do we use the thing that scares us to actually excite us, that we can engage in that reinvention? So yeah, it's been an interesting journey for sure. It's definitely changed the pod in that there's almost always something about AI that we are mentioning at some point in the pod. But we've tried to very mindfully not just make that the central theme, because it's just one aspect of expansiveness. It's not the entire thing. But it's seductive, you know, so you have to be careful.
Yeah, it can definitely suck you in, and can open Pandora's box every episode. Now, exactly like you said, Eric, when you started on your as a leadership specialist, AI, like I said, was around, but wasn't talked about that much. Now it is like the only thing people want to talk about. And we're like, okay, I hear what you say about leadership, but tell me more about AI. How have you had to like almost pivot your talks or your workshops to be able to address the elephant in the room, which is, okay, what the hell are we supposed to do about AI?
You know, the way that I've been approaching it is that I want to make people aware of some of the most important things that are happening in AI, but I don't want to ever be an AI specialist. Like, at least not, it's not something that I've felt drawn to. But it's an important part of the context. So whenever we're delivering a keynote or doing a workshop, it's an important part of where we are right now, is that we have this big thing that we need to respond to. And where most of my attention then goes isn't what that response looks like, but how do we actually be mindful about the response? So for example, like, what this already means is that we are busy dealing with change and reinvention. And change is a very difficult thing for people to do. And it's difficult for a wide variety of reasons. But one of the most difficult things about change is that it's not just an external process. You know, we look at AI and we think, okay, well, the thing is, I need to go do X, Y, Z. I need to integrate AI into my website, or I need to integrate AI into my customer service. Sure, that's part of it. But if you are really going to reinvent yourself, it will require that you also do some inner work, because you need to reinvent how you show up in the world, how you think about these things, and how you bring people along if you're a leader. And so what that means is, you'll need to be comfortable dealing with endings, because the way that the company used to organize or operate, that's ending. The identity that you've developed because of a skill set that you've had, that's ending. And so we need to deal with endings. We need to be able to deal with the wilderness, which is this time where we go into and everything is all over the show and there's chaos and there's confusion and we are going down different paths and trying new things and different things. And you need to know that that's part of what you are going through. And when you see people in the wilderness, that's how they recalibrate. You know, you can't try and rush them through that. You need to understand that this is part of the inner recalibration of their identity. And then finally, we get to the new beginning, which is the reinvention is coming to, it's almost coming full circle to the point where we feel like, okay, now I know where we're going. I know who I am. I know, you know, I have clarity about who I want to be. So there's this entire internal process that we are going through when it comes to change that isn't spoken about enough, because all we focus on is, are you doing the change? Are you doing the external thing that will lead to the change? And very often, we know exactly what to do. We know how to do it. We just don't do it. And we go, but like, why? Like, we get so frustrated. Why aren't you doing this thing? It's because you're not paying attention to this internal emotional handbrake that someone has applied. And you keep pushing externally. But the way to do it is actually just very gently to release that inner emotional handbrake. And so the better we can understand this, the more effective we become in changing, the more effective we'll be at dealing with things like artificial intelligence. I believe that everyone is smart enough to figure out how to deal with it. Like, you are smart enough because you've been using apps your entire life. Like, what is ChatGPT other than an app at the moment? Like, you log onto your phone in the same way. It's just interacting with this thing, though, that has the potential to take away your job. That's kind of like, that's the what it feels like. And so it's not like the doing, because you can figure that out. It's the drama, the internal drama, that's going to stop you from taking action. So that's the thing we need to figure out. And because of that, there are many tangents that we can go on, many things that we need to tick the box for, in terms of, for example, how we communicate to people, in order to make sure that change happens more effectively.
No, that's fascinating, Eric. And I think maybe the risk here is that we try and expect results too fast, or we jump in it too fast. And then we are quickly overwhelmed, we fall to pieces, and we end up being in the same spot, where I think you're more advocating for a bit more of an intentional approach. Let's think this through. The world is moving so fast, it doesn't help you try and keep up at the speed of light. But we can take some of the concepts and some of the key things, and we can start working on those at least. And if we get our foundation right, then whatever happens outside of that is what happens. But at least we're moving in the right direction, and we put in each brick down on top of the cement in a secure way, not just throwing stuff and hoping it will figure itself out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a two-pronged approach. There's the first, you need to create intentional time for your team to actually experiment with things like artificial intelligence. I'm always surprised that leaders will tell me, you know, we want our teams to be better, and then we want them to, you know, adopt AI. And then you're like, okay, well, so how are you guys creating the space for it? And then there's like, well, no, we don't. We're just busy with the work. But if you're just reactive and just responding to everything that's coming across your desk, then you're not being intentional enough in creating the space for people to explore these tools. So that's the first part, that there needs to be integration with the tool. You know, there needs to be experimentation with the tool. How does it make most sense in our context? And then the second thing is then, well, are you creating the space to talk about the things that are ending? And again, you know, like, I can point to many teams that I've spoken to over the past few months where people aren't engaging with artificial intelligence, not because they don't know how to, but because they worry that once they start doing this, they'll see how irrelevant they might become, or how this thing will replace them. Or like, am I literally creating the thing that will replace me? Because now I've created the AI workflow, and now you go, oh, well, now I don't need you. And therefore, you know, and it's a real threat. You know, people, like, they are feeling it very tangibly. I was speaking to someone earlier this week who told me that they fired for half of their lawyers, or let go of half of their lawyers, because they don't need as many anymore, because AI is taking up many of those functions. Duolingo came out. They said they're not going to be using contractors where they can use AI instead. So it's It's like, it's a real thing. People are being displaced because of it. And so if you don't address that internal alarm that's going off for people and help them to just soothe and calm their nervous systems a bit, then no amount of learning is going to help them actually engage with it in a productive manner.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely fascinating. Look, I think it's really something for people to keep tabs on and to have honest and open conversations about it. You might not get fired eventually, but if you're going to delay the inevitable, you're going to be out on the street. So, to rather have those tough conversations sooner rather than later. Now, Eric, as part of the expansive podcast, when you're not talking about AI or the future or leadership, you're also talking about dogs quite a lot. And it's obviously a very important subject to you and John, and being very open about your dogs and the journey with the dogs. And I recall the quick rise to fame of people like Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, leader of the pack, matching dogs and owner leadership, and things like that. What have your dogs taught you over the years about leadership?
Dude, so much. It's one of the main features of the Expansive Pod. John and I both have a huge love for dogs. I don't even know where to begin with that. My dogs have been the most transformational force in my life. In many ways, like we've only had three dogs thus far, my wife and I. And the first dog that we had was called Axel. He was a Malamute Shepherd cross. And unfortunately, he passed away last year in October. And it was one of the toughest things that I've ever had to deal with in my life. So he was adopted or rescued, and so was, all of them were. And I think that one of the most important things that they've shown me, I could literally write a book about it, but one of the most important things that they've shown me is the power of environment. And so we had Axel, then we had Jaeger. Jaeger is a Shepherd Cross Malinois. And Axel didn't come with any trauma because he was still relatively young. He was about 6 months old. Jaeger we adopted at 5 years old, and it was quite clear to us that he was in an abusive household with the male figure being the abuser, because when we adopted him, I would walk into the room, and as I walk in, he would just run out. And at night, if we wanted to get him into the house to come and lie with us in the room, I'd have to go and leash him and then bring him up with me. And even then, sometimes he wouldn't come with me. And it was quite interesting. I would literally hand the leash to Axel, and Axel would take the leash and bring him up into the room with us. And then he would follow. So that was quite interesting. But that dog, Jaeger, has gone from abusive or abused, scared, a shell of who he used to be, to today, flourishing, happy, picky about what he eats, a complete transformation. And it's mostly been that he's in an environment that supports it right now. And I mean, this is true for everything that we do, whether that's in our personal lives or as leaders, is that you have to think about the environment. We have to think about it a lot more, in fact, because it is the thing that nourishes everything that happens beyond, leaders will often say, oh, we want people to be open and honest in conversations. Okay, cool. Yes, I can teach you exactly how to do that by giving you the framework, for example, for how to have open and honest conversations. It won't happen if the environment isn't conducive to it. So it always has to start with the environment. And any behavior that you see, you can trace back and go, is the environment creating this behavior? Or is the environment squashing this kind of behavior that I want to see? So it's such a huge impact in our lives. And I think we often underestimate that we need to just go back to environment, just go back to soil. Is it supportive and enriching and nourishing for the things that we want to see and for the people around us? And if that's good, okay, cool. Now we can start trimming further up the plant, but you have to start with the soil. Environment is everything.
Mm. Yeah, that's one of the things we preach here on the Right Place podcast, is that your right place is at the intersection of your roles, relationships, and environment. And you might be in the perfect role, have a great relationship with your team, but if the environment is toxic or it sucks or it just drains all of your energy, you're never going to grow. You're never going to reach your potential. You're never going to want to be there. So it's 100% true, exactly what you say about the soil, like what is around you and what is affecting you, because no one's made of titanium. We are all affected by what's happening around us, the people, the places, the things that we do. And sometimes we just take it for granted. We think, oh, this is nothing. But it's these little small things that that creep up, that can bite us, or that can just hinder us from finding our right place.
Yeah, and I think if you have the ability to influence your environment, then, and like you're unhappy with where you are and you feel like it could be better. If you can influence your environment, then you can still influence what you are going to experience. Whereas very often I've actually coached people out of organizations because no matter what you do, the culture and the environment is so ingrained, it's never going to change. And so like, why spend your energy trying to fight it and trying to change it when you could just find the right environment and then use that energy instead for growth and for development and for pursuing something that you care about? So it really is something that, you need to be so mindful about and realistic about the influence that you can have on that environment.
No, absolutely. 100% agree with you. Now, one of my favorite words I learned from you on the Expansive podcast is accretion, the accumulation of small and intentional behaviors and decisions. And that seems to be very top of mind at the moment. These micro learnings, these small things that happen on a daily basis. What are you teaching your clients about accretion currently?
Yeah. So the quote that sparked it for me was, it's been ascribed to Edison. I don't know if he really said it, you never know who quoted what on the internet. But the quote read that those who are successful in the end will be those whose success is the result of steady accretion. And the definition for accretion is the gradual accumulation of additional layers, or growth or increase through the gradual accumulation of additional layers. And as you said, if we filter it through our own lives, then it's the accumulation of our decisions and our actions. It's probably the word that has had one of the most profound impacts in my life. I deal in ideas, so I share lots of ideas all the time. And there's a handful of them that I would say has fundamentally changed my worldview. Accretion is one of them. It does a few things for me. Maybe one of the most important is that it allows me to be a bit more patient with the outcome, and especially as we go through life and we have certain ups and downs, it's kind of helpful to remember that like missing one day on like going to the gym isn't going to have a huge impact. Like having one unhealthy meal isn't going to make you unhealthy. It's really all about what you're accumulating. And so even if you feel like you're not seeing the results you want to see and you're not getting to where you want to go, just remember, like, am I accumulating the right kind of things? It gives me this very clear filter for what I'm doing every single day. And if I'm not seeing it, it's fine, as long as I'm accumulating. And if I miss a day or two, it's fine, because overwhelmingly, I'm accumulating the right kind of thing. So it gives me the patience to just give it time. And I know that accretion is a force of nature. It's never wrong. It always does its job. It doesn't care like what you feed into it. All it does is accumulate. So I can trust in that process. And therefore, I can just run that filter every day. Am I accumulating the right kind of thing? And if I'm not seeing results in my life, I can either boil it down to you're accumulating the wrong kind of thing. Okay, so I can change that. Or more patience. Like you haven't reached the tipping point yet. You haven't accumulated enough yet. And that gives me peace of mind, because we want to see results so quickly. So that just, it kind of slows me down and makes me more intentional and more deliberate with what I do every day. And I think that's ultimately the greatest gift of accretion, is you realize that those small things matter, because not because it just exists in a vacuum today, but because those small things accumulated give you the big things. And so be intentional, even with the smallest thing. And if you're not for a day, that's also okay. But just get back on it again tomorrow.
No, I love that answer, Eric. And are there any like small habits that a person can adopt to almost take advantage of this concept? Is like journaling more, meditating more, being a bit more intentional in terms of what you consume? Like what are some of those go-to habits maybe?
You know, I've stopped being prescriptive about habits because I think it's so much about what you are trying to achieve and who you want to be in the season of life that you are in. I can tell you what mine are. You know, like one of my habits is that I love getting up in the morning early and then going for a walk with the dogs and doing a walking meditation. So, you know, and that's a good example. Like I used to get up in the morning and go downstairs and put on my headset and meditate for 30 minutes. And now that habit has changed. Like it's still meditation, but now I do a walking meditation with the dogs. So right or wrong here, like it shouldn't, should I be sitting down or should I be walking? Should it be a Joe Dispenza meditation or should it, like we often try and be so specific with these things, whereas like the specificity doesn't matter as much as we think it does sometimes. So I think anything where you are creating a space for yourself to think, I think that's, you know, if we just speak a bit more broadly, that would be a good habit. Anything where you are making the space to look after yourself, that would be a good habit. Anything where you are trying to improve your environment, that would be a good habit. So I don't think it's about the specifics. You know, you need to see how it aligns to your goals and what's important to you. But definitely walking meditations has been great for me. I do a smaller version of journaling. So I don't do like a morning pages, but as I go through the day, like I'm sitting here and I'm kind of journaling thoughts down as I go, just trying to trap ideas and anything that sort of jumps out at me. And I think that's actually like, I can't even think of many more habits that I have like that. A lot of the other things are more sporadic throughout the week. But I would say like, just, you know, zoom out on your goals and use that to backtrack into your habits.
No, I think that's wonderful advice. I think, I mean, it's been said on social media quite a few times. People post their schedules and they like what helps them win. And then people try and copy it. And it's like, dude, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. You can be rather be inspired by their schedule, but don't try and copy paste someone's schedule down to the last minute. It's just not going to work for you. You're not the same person, you're not in the same environment, but take these little things that you hear people doing, like the journaling, like the walking meditation, and see if that can fit into your routine. It might just start something that get you out of your comfort zone or get you just thinking, not about work, but thinking about life, putting your goals front and center for once. And I think those little things, that's where the magic can happen. That's where the accretion can set. And you can reflect on this type of stuff. And then being patient with yourself, because the world is going so crazy at the moment. And I love this quote from Justin Welch. She said, the best people he knows currently are slowing down, they're not speeding up. So you're trying to be like so you not deliberately painfully snail slow, but you're taking deliberate steps, walking and operating at a deliberate pace so that you don't get overwhelmed, because there's no chance that you can catch the speed of light that everything's happening at. I think that's wonderful advice. Just slow it down a bit. And things can fall into place.
It's also, I mean, how else do you have a mindful response to the world? You know, we are so programmed to just be reactive. And that reactivity creates fear, frustration, anxiety. It leads us down paths that we didn't actually want to go down. And we see this quite often. People wake up one morning and they go, like, how did I get here? Well, the way that you got there was that you were being so reactive to everything that was happening that you didn't even realize that you weren't intentionally steering yourself down the path that you would like to go down. So that space for just thinking about who do you want to be? Where do you want to get to? What do you want to achieve? Is really valuable. And that creates the slowing down. Did you see that Ashton Hall, like it went super viral, that Ashton Hall morning routine?
Yes.
On TikTok.
That was hilarious.
So for the listeners, it's just like very jacked dude doing a morning routine where he starts at like 3 o'clock in the morning. He pours mineral water from a very fancy water brand into a bowl with ice, dunks his face. Then he goes for like a speed run. Then he's like swimming in a pool. Then he's doing a sauna. Then he's journaling. Then he's like, it's like 4 hours or 5 hours of a morning routine before he starts his day at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And of course, it created this massive virality and everyone was ripping into him. And I don't know to what extent he was engineering that. But it was just so funny because I remember there was a time in my life when I really bought into that. And maybe right at the start of my self-development journey, around 2011, 2012, I'd say. And it was the Robin Sharma 5 a.m. club. And it was wake up at 5 a.m. That is the catalyst. And then read, write, like, you know, meditate, go to the gym, do a sauna, healthy breakfast. Like, it was just this entire thing, like 2 or 3 hours of things before your day gets going. And today I look at that, I'm like, that just seems exhausting to me. I prefer the slowness of my day, and I prefer just choosing one or two things that feels good to me. And if it feels good to me, I know I'm going to start my day in the right state of mind. And from there, everything can just flow. Whereas like to have done an entire to-do list before I get to my to-do list for the day, just not where I'm at.
No, exactly, Eric. Eric, it's been such a fascinating discussion. I really always enjoy learning from you, listening to the pod, reading the Dangerous book. Definitely had a massive impact on my life. I'm really looking forward to seeing you and John at the Tryst in Cape Town, get my own copy of the expansive book. Really looking forward to checking it out. I will definitely add a link in the show notes for people to secure their spot at the Tryst in Cape Town and in Johannesburg as well. Eric, if people want to connect with you, if they want to learn more about you, maybe get you in for a keynote or a workshop, what's the best way for people to do that?
Just go to my website, erickkruger.com.
And that's got everything there. Perfect.
Everything's there.
Eric, thank you so much for your time. Thank you. I really appreciate this.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you soon. I wish you all the best with the book launch in Cape Town and Joburg. I'm sure it's going to be a fascinating time. We'll see you and John make a formidable team. I'm sure there'll be lots of banter, lots of fun on stage with you guys. And I'm sure Mark Sham will bring the house down as well.
For sure, yes.
I don't know if he's doing MC duties or what, but I'm sure he'll be involved and he'll jump up on stage and chat a bit as well. So thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Eric Kruger. Please connect with him at erickkruger.com. Also follow him on LinkedIn at Eric Kruger. Check out the Expansive podcast, always one of my favorite podcasts. Thank you so much for catching us here on the Right Place podcast. And look forward to hearing your feedback on this episode. Please subscribe and like down below. Send us a comment as well if you enjoyed this episode. And we'll see you next time at the Right Place. Cheers.